This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. Hillary Clinton becomes the first female presidential nominee of a major U.S. political party, a historic milestone that sets the stage for the general election battle against Republican candidate Donald Trump. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. The tenor, substance, and roster of speakers at the Democratic National Convention, or DNC, stood in stark contrast to that of the Republican National Convention, or RNC. The RNC was dominated by presentations from Donald Trump's family and close friends. The DNC mobilized the majority of congressional Democrats, including some who initially backed rival Bernie Sanders, as well as U.S. President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama, whose forceful endorsement of Hillary Clinton on the first night of the convention laid out the high stakes in November.
And make no mistake about it, this November, when we go to the polls, that is what we're deciding. Not Democrat or Republican, not left or right. No, in this election and every election is about who will have the power to shape our children for the next 4 or 8 years of their lives. And I am here tonight because in this election, there is only one person who I trust with that responsibility. Only one person who I believe is truly qualified to be President of the United States, and that is our friend, Hillary Clinton.
If the unifying theme of the Republican National Convention was the demonization of Hillary Clinton, and if Republican nominee Donald Trump painted a dark and ominous portrait of America that he and he alone could lead, then President Obama had a response for him.
Our power doesn't come from some self-declared savior promising that he alone can restore order as long as we do things his way. We don't look to be ruled. Our power comes from those immortal declarations first put to paper right here in Philadelphia all those years ago. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that we, the people, can form a more perfect union. That's who we are. That's our birthright, the capacity to shape our own destiny.
And President Obama also contradicted Mr. Trump's disparagement of former Senator and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's record overseas by saying that she is a known and respected quantity overseas and among U.S. military officers.
If you're rightly concerned about who's going to keep you and your family safe in a dangerous world, well, the choice is even clearer. Hillary Clinton is respected around the world, not just by leaders, but by the people they serve. I have to say this. People outside of the United States do not understand what's going on in this election. They really don't. Because they know Hillary. They've seen her work. She's worked closely with our intelligence teams, our diplomats, our military. She has the judgment and the experience and the temperament to meet the threat from terrorism. It's not new to her. Our troops have pounded ISIL without mercy, taking out their leaders, taking back territory. And I know Hillary won't relent until ISIL is destroyed. She will finish the job. And she will do it without resorting to torture or banning entire religions from entering our country. She is fit and she is ready to be the next commander-in-chief.
That was President Obama speaking on behalf of Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton, but taking the podium on the last night of the convention, Hillary Clinton, making history as the first woman to be nominated for president by a major political party, summed up her view of her adversary this way.
So just ask yourself, do you really think Donald Trump has the temperament to be commander-in-chief? Donald Trump can't even handle the rough and tumble of a presidential campaign. He loses his cool at the slightest provocation. When he's gotten a tough question from a reporter, when he's challenged in a debate, when he sees a protester at a rally, Imagine, if you dare, imagine him in the Oval Office facing a real crisis. A man you can bait with a tweet is not a man we can trust with nuclear weapons.
That was former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and the nominee of the Democratic Party for President of the United States, underscoring her qualifications and experience and declaring that her opponent is temperamentally unfit for the highest public office in the nation. Other top Democrats and some Republicans and independents launched a fierce critique of Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump at the Democratic National Convention, signaling an intense and likely negative general election campaign to come. Well, with us to discuss whether Hillary Clinton and her surrogates succeeded and to preview the general election campaign are two distinguished political analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. He's also a regular columnist for the Politico newspaper. And Alan Lichtman, he's a distinguished professor of history at American University. He's an author and leading expert on presidential and congressional campaigns. His book, White Protestant Nation, was one of the five finalists nominated in the nonfiction category for the National Book Critics Circle Award in 2009. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carol.
Well, John Fortier, first to you. You were here last week talking with us about the Republican National Convention. Now, your take on what transpired at the DNC.
Well, there were definitely some contrasts. I mean, the Democratic Convention was a much more organized effort than the Republican one, which was often reeling from one topic to another, not as well put on. The balloons weren't as good at the end. There are all sorts of things one could point to. And certainly the Republican Convention was somewhat fractious. I would say the Democratic Convention, I think, as it ended up, Hillary Clinton did well towards the end of the week. The speakers that really supported her were strongly for her. There's a good bench of people who are making the case for her. But there were some hiccups, and the hiccups really particularly were that the Bernie Sanders delegates were not as unified as they might have been. And while there were certainly among the Republican leaders great worry about Donald Trump, division within the elites, you certainly saw Bernie Sanders delegates booing Bernie Sanders himself for supporting Hillary Clinton early on, making protests, sometimes having to be chanted down by the other delegates when they wanted to make their Bernie Sanders case. So there was this undercurrent that some of the Bernie Sanders delegates were not buying the Clinton message. I think at the end of the day, the voters will come around, the Bernie Sanders voters will come back to Hillary Clinton. But it certainly was there as a noticeable feature of a Democratic convention, which had some other strengths.
Turning to you, Alan Lichtman, no question there was some disunity at the beginning of the convention, about which we'll speak in a moment. But your take in general about the DNC, especially in contrast to the Republican National Convention.
I thought the disunity was actually much more tempered than one might have expected. This was not the 1968 Democratic Convention when you had, in essence, a police riot and violence in the streets. You had a little bit of dissension, but that was not the main theme of the convention. The main theme of the convention, I think, remarkably, was to reintroduce Hillary Clinton to the American people, someone, you know, who has been around for 25 years, who probably has been investigated more than anyone else, but someone about whom people were uncertain. And I think they did a very good job of reintroducing Hillary Clinton as someone who, in fact, can be trusted, as someone who has a track record, as someone who not only cares about ordinary people, but has worked on behalf of ordinary people. They made a very big point, which I thought was quite effective, of her work in getting the children's health care bill, which has provided health insurance to 8 million children. As for Hillary herself, she's not Barack Obama. She's not John F. Kennedy. She's not Franklin Roosevelt. She's not going to send us into raptures. But I thought, given who she is, she did as good a job as possible. I think in the end, the Democrats came out unified. And I think most importantly, there were really sharp contrasts with the Republicans expressed by a couple of lines. One, that Donald Trump has taken us from morning in America to midnight in America, two utterly different views of where the country is and where it should be going. And the second one, how can you trust a man who can be baited with a tweet to control nuclear weapons, trying to say she's steady, she's trustworthy. By God, who knows what might happen with Donald Trump?
Indeed. She is as she said herself, she's more of a workhorse than a show horse. But before we get into Hillary Clinton and the general election campaign, back to you, John Forte, to discuss just briefly what happened in the run-up in the first day of the convention. The DNC was hacked, we know, several months ago. Now we know that through our own FBI that very likely it was Russian hackers. And then these emails were released by, we believe it was WikiLeaks. And these emails were rather damaging because it showed that the DNC favored Hillary Clinton. Now, she is the favorite, and she is a Democrat, in contrast to Bernie Sanders, who became a Democrat. He was an independent to run. But that notwithstanding, it was still a bit damaging. So discuss particularly the angle where Donald Trump himself seemed to invite Russia to further hack Hillary Clinton's emails, some 30,000 emails on her private server, and the firestorm that this caused. This seemed to be, you know, unprecedented, that a candidate for the election would invite a foreign adversary to hack his political opponent.
Well, the early controversy at the beginning of the convention did fan some flames that were out there. The Bernie Sanders delegates in particular were worked up because now we had behind-the-scenes emails showing some staffers at the party, which was supposedly neutral as to who would be the nominee, doing some things that would favor Hillary Clinton. So it certainly stirred some of this up. I agree with Alan. At the end of the day, this, well, 1968 is a pretty high standard to fall yeah. short of, but it certainly wasn't, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think the main theme. But it certainly at the beginning of the convention, there was greater unrest among the Bernie Sanders delegates, and this certainly added to that. Donald Trump steps into things and did step into this later in the week and mentioned, as you said, that he thought that Republicans are worried that Hillary Clinton, some of the emails have never been released. They won't see the light of day. And he, I think, somewhat playfully said that the Russians could release them if they have them. It's a complicated story, too, because WikiLeaks is the intermediary. We don't know that it's Russian. The WikiLeaks themselves are trying to exercise a certain amount of power by saying, well, we have this information and we'll release it as we see fit, with a real intent to damage Hillary Clinton. So it's a complicated story, and many were very critical of Donald Trump for his comments on that. I took them as somewhat sarcastic.
Well, he certainly said they were sarcastic, Alan Lichtman, but he did openly and overtly urge a foreign state, Russia, to hack into the private email server of a presidential candidate. In other words, to engage in espionage. Do you think he was being sarcastic? How seriously do you take this?
I take it very seriously. If you think he's been joking and sarcastic, you might as well dismiss everything the man says, because it could all be interpreted because so much of what he says is so absurd. No, I don't think it was sarcastic at all. And let me tell you why. He didn't just say, if you have the emails, release them. He said, find the emails. And the only way you can find those emails is by having a foreign power hack into an American server. That violates American law. The Stored Communications Act makes it a crime punishable by imprisonment up to 5 years for a first offense to hack into a private email server. So not only is he inviting the Russians to interfere in an American presidential election, he's inviting them to break American law. And he didn't just say this once. He tweeted it again after saying it. And he only said it was sarcastic after he was hit with a barrage of bipartisan criticism. General Michael Hayden, who had served as head of the CIA and the National Security Agency under President Bush, blasted him and said, it may be he just doesn't have a clue. I don't understand how anyone could be saying this. And on the very day that he said he was being sarcastic, he broke precedent by saying something else, that Mr. Putin was a better leader than Barack Obama. Not only has Donald Trump become the first American in all of our history to invite a hostile foreign power to intervene in an American presidential election, he's the first candidate in U.S. history to say that a murderous foreign dictator, and I use the word murderous advisedly, is a better leader than the sitting American president. It's outrageous. Carl Bernstein, you know, Bernstein and Woodward, the team that outed Watergate, who's been very critical of Hillary Clinton's use of her email server, said he thought Trump's comments were disqualifying for the presidency.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are John Forte. He's political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center here in Washington. And Alan Lichtman, from whom you just heard. He's Distinguished Professor of History at American University, also here in Washington. And we're discussing the outcome of the Democratic National Convention and previewing the general election matchup between Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a loyal fan from Sana'a, Yemen, Fuad Al-Marimi. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier, to further discuss this invitation by Donald Trump to the Russians to basically hack into Hillary Clinton's private server and to find those emails. The question is, will many Republicans look at it your way and see this as a sarcastic remark, something that he really didn't mean? Or will they take it very seriously? Because we know most Republicans are dead set against Vladimir Putin. He is anathema to them. His upending the post-World War II order by invading Crimea, annexing Crimea, and all kinds of other nefarious activities that he's been engaged in, threatening NATO countries. So the question again is, will they still perceive Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server as a greater sin than what Donald Trump is saying and urging vis-a-vis the Russians?
Look, Republicans, many of them in positions in Washington and others in the party, already feel this worry about Donald Trump. It's not the first set of comments he's made about Russia, and he essentially said that some of the Eastern European countries might be on their own. We might not support them in NATO, or hinted at that. So he certainly both said some things that make all sorts of Republican foreign policy people very uncomfortable. And even the things he said, if he's backed off and moved around on them a bit, that also makes people uncomfortable. What does he really know? What does he really mean? The only thing I'll say in the other direction is this. Look, Donald Trump obviously is not a traditional candidate. We don't know how he will do in the end. He's doing okay, I guess, in the polls. But he's sort of repositioned his party on some issues that it would have been very hard for a traditional candidate to do so. On the very big, broad scope of foreign policy, because I agree, I think, on many of the specifics, he either doesn't have them or they're troubling or they're contradictory. But he has found a way to position himself as someone who is worried about American adventurism and think that the Iraq war was wrong, but also that we have done a very poor job in allowing ISIS to rise and that we need to be much tougher and worry about that threat to terrorism. That is an interesting position that certainly implicates some Republicans and doesn't accept George Bush's positions, but certainly puts Hillary Clinton in a different light and puts Barack Obama's policies the last 8 years on how they did ISIS in a different light. And so while it's rough and lots to worry about, he has positioned the party in a way that might be able to take advantage of a group in America that holds both of those views and sees that as being a reasonable set of things to go forward on.
What about that, Alan Lichtman? Hillary Clinton is certainly not a favorite of even many Democrats, Bernie Sanders supporters. She has very high unfavorables. Do you think she made a persuasive case to bring Democrats together and make inroads with some Republicans, particularly those predominantly male, white, without a college education Republicans who seem to be at all costs ready to vote for Donald Trump no matter what he says, how outrageous he sounds?
I have no doubt that 90% of the Democrats are going to come around. There's been some really fascinating surveys that give a whole different slant on the Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders crowd. It turns out that the Bernie Sanders supporters are no more liberal than the Hillary Clinton supporters. They're just a lot more angry and more extreme. So it's not as if they have fundamental policy disagreements with Hillary Clinton. They just have to kind of bank their anger a little bit and come around to someone who is vastly closer to their policies than obviously Donald Trump is on any issue of any importance to them. There's no way Hillary Clinton is going to win the white male vote in this country, but she doesn't have to. All she's got to do is make some small inroads in that vote. If she takes the white women's vote, she'll win this election overwhelmingly because she's going to win the overwhelming majority of minority votes.
How do you see it, John Fortier, with respect to demographics and the electoral map going forward for Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump? Can she, as Alan says, still win without the so-called white male vote?
We've been seeing this trend over time. And after 2012, Republicans did, some called it an autopsy of their party, needed to think about expanding its reach into minority groups, young people, better Hispanic vote. And as it turns out, the nominee of the party is actually doubling down on the other strategy. Really, what has been happening, the Republican Party over time has been gaining in the white vote, the white working class vote, as it's been losing in the other groups. Is it possible to win that way? I think it is possible. It's a hard road to hoe. And I think Alan's right that really we're talking about the margins here. 90% of the Democrats are going to stay with the traditional party. But Donald Trump is making a play for voters, certainly with immigration. And I would note doubling down on the issue of trade. Now, Hillary Clinton has kind of followed Bernie Sanders and become more skeptical, certainly, of the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal. We'll see how that goes. But Donald Trump is making an all-out play for an even increased vote of the white working class vote. The math for the long term, I think, was not very good at that at all. Even in the short term, it's tough. But we will see, is he able to pull off this trick by losing some, maybe some suburban and some women voters, but gaining a lot in the white working class vote, which has already moved to the Republican Party in good amounts, but doubling down on that and seeing if he can pull off a win that way.
Back to you, Alan Lichtman. On the other side, do you think that Donald Trump could break into any part of the so-called Obama-Clinton coalition among any of the groups, whether it's African-Americans or other minorities, women? Because if indeed he cannot win the election based on the white working class male vote alone, he certainly does still appeal to some women and some people who just simply do not and will not ever vote for Hillary Clinton.
Right. There's certainly a never Hillary vote. They're not necessarily going to vote for Donald Trump, though. Understand there are some alternatives, like Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party, Jill Stein of the Green Party, not voting. But I think Donald Trump is going to have a very difficult time breaking into any of those elements of the Obama coalition. Look, women unite strongly behind this history-making first woman presidential candidate in history. African Americans are going to vote 95% for Hillary Clinton. And Donald Trump has so alienated the Hispanic community that he's not going to be able to make inroads there either. You know, I think John is right. He's taken a different path. I'm not saying it's 100% going to lead to his defeat, but I agree with John. It's a very, very narrow and very, very difficult path for Donald Trump to follow. And he keeps making these outrageous statements, saying a dictator is a better leader than Obama. Then he says, you know, I'd like to take that little guy at the Democratic convention. I'm not sure who it was. It might have been Michael Bloomberg. And hit him so hard that his head spins. What other presidential candidate in our history would ever have gotten away with making a fraction of these statements? They would have been drummed out of the candidacy, perpetrating violence, wanting to hit someone. You know, that is so unpresidential. You know, I would say against American traditions.
Why do you think it persists? What is going on in the American electorate among those who do support him?
I think there's just so much anger and so much angst about the current situation. What Donald Trump is trying to play into, the fact that, you know, 60-some-odd percent of American people, when asked in the polls, think the country is going off in the wrong direction. And he is certainly pioneering a very, very different direction for the country. And look, this appeal, I will fix it all, it's been an appeal that strong men have made throughout history, and it's often worked. But I have to say, you know, when these strong men have gotten into office, who's benefited? Not the average person, only them and their allies.
So I guess, John Fortier, that's the message that Hillary Clinton and her running mate, Tim Kaine, will probably have to make henceforth on the campaign trail.
Well, I think you're right that they will make that argument, although they don't have to try too hard to make that argument. I mean, Donald Trump is making it, and it's in the ether. Whether it will succeed or not, or whether it's all rolling off his back, as it has many times, is another question. But certainly it's something that they will stress: stability and experience versus uncertainty and really volatility.
And of course, we'll have much more for our audience in the weeks and months ahead as we preview and follow the general election campaign. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier. He's political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Alan Lichtman, distinguished professor of history at American University. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Mary Schrott for booking our guests. Our engineer was John Dryden, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another encounter on The Voice of America.